since my divorce 2 years ago, I have tried to avoid, for all sorts of very good reasons, which continue to be good reasons, too much information regarding my ex and myself and our relationship, because per my general do no harm prime directive rule, you know, this is my blog, it isn't my ex's blog, and my ex's life is my ex's life, not mine, and no, you know, not part of mine any longer, and I don't have a right to objectify it. Plus, even though I get angry, and I'm sure my ex gets angry, and I can't speak to what goes on in my ex's brain, but even though I get angry, I know it's stupid to blame people for relationships like that. Like, technically speaking, she dumped me, but she would probably make the point that in my own way, I dumped her. The last year of that relationship was rocky, and I made choices, and my ex made choices. Some of them were good choices, some of them were terrible. And if I was being honest, as I've stated before, if the responsibility or the blame for a marriage gone awry and a divorce occurring is a pie chart, then rightfully I probably have 70% of that pie chart and my ex takes 30. And I think that's a fair statement. So I stay away from these issues, and I stay away from them because my ex is not some evil person. I might get pissed off in very private conversations sometimes and say things like, you know, the B word or something. But the fact is, she wasn't. She was actually a pretty rare person. And this gets to the point of my podcast. You know, people are asking me, Dan, why don't you get out there and get dating? Like, I've sort of made a couple of friends. I don't know if they're friends yet because we haven't done much together. But I've gone and played poker with them a couple times. And one of the women, who's about 10 years younger than me, you know, said, Dan, you know, you're a good guy. You should have a girlfriend. And she's a nice person. And, you know, because of the relationship with those friends, you know, it's circumstances where they're always, you know, nice people. And I'll leave that kind of vague soprano speak to hang out there by itself. But they're nice people. And she meant it nicely. She was being a nice person. But the fact is, and I remember telling my ex this, and, you know, and it was during a conversation about, you know, depression. You know, my ex suffered. I think she's actually managed to deal with it pretty effectively at this point. But for a number of years, my ex suffered from, you know, periodic seasonal affective disorder. So basically depression, you know, during the winter months. But she, you know, my ex was able to find a strategy. She figured things out. She, you know, went the drug path for a while. She ended up, you know, using essentially really bright lights in the morning and managing nutrition and other things. And in that sense, in the last few years, you know, my ex has been doing quite well with that. I suffer from a different kind of depression, and I'm going to talk about it because it's important, especially given my last podcast, especially given the topic of the Second Amendment. Because really, for people who do suffer from depression, all this conversation about people who have mental issues don't have a right to a gun is a really, it actually makes things worse. It actually, for many of us, it kind of, in a bad situation, and I'm not in that situation currently, but if you're in a bad situation, it can reinforce dark feelings about the world. So I don't know what they're trying to achieve in scaring the hell out of people that if they go see their doctor, they're not going to be able to own a firearm. But I got to tell you, I think it's really counterproductive. That being said, this post is not about the Second Amendment, okay? So I suffer from a form of depression that is more episodic. It has a kind of frequency, but it isn't every year. It's like every 8 to 10 years. And I actually think I now know why, and I think I have a solution to prevent it from ever happening again. But really, it's hit me. It's hit me every 10 years since I was 20. The first episode was really bad. And I will say, each episode was triggered. It didn't really just come out of the blue. It feels sort of random that the triggers are sort of 8 to 10 years apart, but I really don't honestly know how to explain that. I don't believe in superstitious things, so I'm simply going to say that's some weird, that is a weird thing, but each one of them was triggered, and really, I'm trying to manage it from an anxiety perspective these days. My theory is that my depressions are not so much the result of being predisposed to depression as much as I am predisposed to being angry. And I am. I freely admit that. I have a strategy for dealing with it. It isn't perfect. It's far from perfect. But it is the best solution I have. It is, of all the terrible alternatives for people who suffer from anxiety, I have chosen the best of all the terrible alternatives for now, and I continue to improve upon it. But again, this podcast isn't about that. This extraordinarily rare person would listen to these conversations. This, you know, my ex, we would have honest conversations about depression. My ex was not happy with how I ended up choosing to deal with those issues, and in some ways I kind of now see her point, although only not, you know, more than halfway, to be honest with you. But she was rare. You know, my ex was rare. My ex was not some terrible person who dumped me. We're never getting back together, but my ex was a rare person. And so when people talk to me about dating, and this is people who know me, because people who know me know that even in my liberal art geek days, which means even before I ever programmed a computer or considered doing a mathematical proof, way, way back in the 90s, people who knew me, they knew I was a calculating person. So if you come up to me and say things like, Dan, why don't you date? Why don't you go out there and date people? Well, I won't tell you this. This is what I'll tell you. I'll say, you know, I'm working on stuff and I'm trying to lose weight. And I think maybe in a year I'll be there. It's possible. I'm just not ready yet. And that's what I will tell you. If you say to me, Dan, you should date, I will tell you that, you know, maybe in about a year, maybe two, when I get my shit together, okay, when I magically end up looking like Johnny Depp and I have a job that makes me $300K a year of real money and not $300K that actually buys $30K worth of shit. You know, in a few years, I got all that stuff balanced out and I'm into football because I don't know. I don't fucking give a shit about football, but I'm into football so we can go watch the games or soccer. Or maybe we could sit together and listen to NPR in a couple of years when I got all my shit together. That's what I'll fucking tell you, and you'll feel better about it, okay? You'll feel good inside, like, well, shit, Dan hasn't given up on love. Dan hasn't given up on love, you know? He hasn't been shown the truth or, you know, he hasn't accepted the dark truth of his younger days. And on some level, because of my own venture humanism, because of my own desire to continually want to wager on humanity, I really haven't given up on love. I mean, you know, love is not just a thing. I think it is in many ways intangible, and I think it can be farcical. I do think a lot of romantic love stuff can be bullshit. But I also think if you look out into nature, and you look at other intelligent social creatures, which sadly enough, often the intelligent social creatures often tend to be predators or predatory types. But that's just a sad thing we can table as a topic for now. But if you look at the social creatures, you know, even the non-predatorial ones, the omnivore ones, but whatever, if you look at the chimpanzees and the killer whales, if you look at these amazingly intricate social creatures, if you are willing and sensitive to it, even if you're observing crows, you'll see instances of love. And I know that sounds crazy, because I like John Searle, as in John Searle, the famous, you know, philosopher of the mind. I agree with him that it's hard to say or explain what it is I mean, but when I look into the eyes of a crow, or an African gray parrot that I've had conversations with, and I have. I had a friend with one once, and I had conversations with it. When I look into the eyes of a killer whale, or a chimpanzee, or a gorilla, I don't say to myself, and let me add dog, and to some extent cat, although frankly, I don't know about the cats. I think they may have no souls. But that being said, even cats, if I look into their eyes, I see a spark. And when I see how they treat each other, even though it may not be as fucking fancy as a fucking Shakespearean sonnet or as tragic as some fucking Romeo and Juliet bullshit, even though through our narrow-minded perspective of anthropomorphizing the bullshit out of reality or the reality out of bullshit with all of our Disney obsession and stupidity and fetishes, okay, the reality is if you look at these creatures and you look long enough, you see, you feel as if something is there. It's not a very philosophical position. It is not a very scientific one. I suppose I could hearken to the phenomenologists and try to get some Husserl-type quote or Bergson or, God forbid, Martin fucking Heidegger. I suppose I might find some Nietzsche, you know, some Nietzsche, not Nietzsche. One of my friends from Atlanta corrected me there. But I suppose I could read some Nietzsche, and it could help me along the road. But yeah, no. Love is everywhere. I mean, it's not everywhere. I'm not that silly. I'm not like, I didn't marry Yoko Ono. So please, let me delete that last statement. In your brain, imagine that strike through, you know, in the font where you have the red strike through and you're typing in WordPerfect or WordPerfect or... I don't know. I run OpenOffice at home, so I don't even use that Microsoft and or other corporate douchey software. But yeah, just strike through the last comment. So love is important. Love is not everything. Love is important. And I haven't given up on love. And if you ask me, I'll tell you, I haven't given up on love, and that will be the truth. But I have given up on the chance that I'm going to find some woman that I'm going to spend my life with. It's not a question of whether I want that. I actually do. The problem is I want other things as well. And if I were to balance all those things out, there isn't any way I can somehow transpose the set of things that I want into the set of things that most women want, which is basically some variant of Johnny Depp the pirate with a really good job and great healthcare benefits. That's what, you know, and obviously, you know, a matching 401k. That's what most women want from a man these days, okay? Now, the truth is, according to the statistical model of our shitty economy, I meet most of half of that. The problem is, I ain't fucking Johnny Depp, and I ain't no fucking pirate, and I am not likely to reinforce your fantasies about the world. If you were to ever date me, and that's why you'd never want to, if you ever dated me, I probably wouldn't spend a whole dinner telling you, oh yeah, yeah, Janet Yellen, she really knows what she's doing. That's probably not going to happen. I tried OkCupid about a year ago. I put up a really honest profile, and then I shared it on Twitter. And oh, by the way, as you all know, I'm no longer on Twitter. I'm not on OkCupid. I am retreating from the social media in stages like the Germans in 44. So please, okay, please. But I posted that profile to get people's opinions, and this one woman responds on Twitter. She says, Dan, no one's ever going to date you with that profile. And I said, well, why are you saying that? Because you're saying things that, you know, people don't want to hear. The problem is I was being honest. Like the very profile I gave essentially was the 100% of the 70% I gave my ex. You know, my ex accused me of being a liar. And I was really angry when she said that, because on a certain level, I've always thought of myself as an honest person. And I always thought my ex and I talked a lot. But as I've meditated on this since then, I've come to the realization that she was probably right on a very deep level. We probably should never have gotten married. We probably should have, you know, been a boyfriend girlfriend for a while and then split up on good terms. I probably lied to myself and lied to my ex just about every single day. And I don't think I did it maliciously. I think I did it because, frankly, my ex was my first girlfriend, and she's only one of 2.5 women I've ever had sex with. And the 0.5 is not a reference to size, it refers to an evening when I was really drunk and I was 19 and I'm just not entirely convinced I had sex. So, because the memory is that bad and I'd had that much whiskey. So, I might have had sex when I was 19, but I'm gonna like tip my hat to Schrodinger and just say I might not have and fuck you. But the point is, this person was one of 2.5 people I've ever had sex with. And I used to tell my ex that 90% of all the human contact I've ever had, I had with my ex. And even in the last couple years where that diminished, it still continues to basically be true today. I mean, I have a great brother, I have great sisters, and we do the proverbial hug thing when I visit. But human contact is more than just that. And having someone, and this isn't even about sex, having a woman in your bed that you can just, snuggle with, there are gonna be some guys out there who say, "Oh, Dan, that's so fucking lame that you said that." But the fact is, for me today and me back then, that was way more important than just the other thing. I mean, I usually screwed it up by talking about the worst possible things, but live and learn. So I'm a calculating guy, and if you tell me, "Dan, you should date," I tell you, there's just no likelihood I'm gonna find a match. The woman on Twitter was right. People don't want to hear about me. There isn't a woman who really wants to date me. Now, here's the deal. When you're dating women, you should listen to them. That's just strategically smart. But if you're actually intelligent, that's not what I'm fucking talking about. I'm not talking about being a good listener so you can score. I'm talking about once you start dating a woman or a man or a man, woman, woman, whatever the combo, gay, straight, I don't give a fuck. Once you start a relationship with someone, you should try to be honest and truthful. And I kind of think that should happen sooner rather than later. I was honest and truthful about a lot of things with my ex way too late, and that was really bad. And there were probably a lot of things I was never honest with myself about or with my ex. So the fact is, I don't really see myself finding anybody close to my ex. It isn't the claim that I think my ex was unbelievably magical. That's not my fucking point either. It's that my ex is as close as I've come so far to someone who can understand me. And that's not an easy job because even if there are things I do and say that a person might like from the outside looking in, I've got a lot of darkness and I got a lot of demons. And I do the best I can to shelter people I love from that. But in some ways, it's like the blog. My blog is my attempt at exorcism in some ways. My writing is a form of exorcism. People won't understand that statement. Some writers will, but my writing is a form of exorcism. And that's kind of the reality. If I'm honest with a woman and I say, "You should read my blog and then decide if you want to date me," the likelihood that that woman will want to date me these days, I think, is about 1 in 1,000. And if I go through the calculus of all the decisions I have to make, financial and otherwise, to achieve some sort of an outcome, that baseline probability, and I look at the economic environment, and I look at my own life, I look at my age, the most likely killers, heart disease, diabetes, cancer. And yes, I can lose weight, and yes, I can get into shape, and guess what? Those are actual goals I have. But it ain't gonna fucking happen overnight. I'm 45 years old, and I have a good job. I mean, in those sarcastic quotes, relativistic kind of fucking sense. But I can't honestly say I feel wealthy or rich. And I wouldn't sit down with a woman and say, "Guess what? I'm wealthy and I'm rich." That is deceptive. That is a lie. So you know what? Uncle Dan, the people who know me, whatever they want to call me, I haven't really given up on love. I think love is important for the world, and I haven't given up on the attempt to love others. I think that is part of the human condition, but more importantly, that's a worthy pursuit to find things in this world you love, you admire, you appreciate. Those are worthy things. Those become a kind of foundation to meaning. And love is kind of the glue that, in many cases, makes that work. So I love my nieces and nephews. They're amazing people. I mostly love my brothers and sisters. They're mostly okay. And if you know what how a Yurisu sword mostly, or you've seen The Princess Bride, you mostly fucking get it. And I have other friends and family I mostly like, and some of them say things that really annoy me, and some of them say things I say, fucking, that was pretty cool. But the bottom line is there are very few people in this life. And I learned this a long time ago when I tried to share a dorm room with an ROTC cadet, twice, two times in a row. I tried it more than once. I tried to live with my brother, at the University of Washington for barely 8 months, and my brother had to run away screaming. We could only afford a studio, and it was my last year at the UW. Fucking 1992, fucking 1993, goddamn. So I have not given up on love, and this may seem like a silly podcast, but I think some of you might be in tune with yourselves enough to get the point. I haven't given up on love, but, and it isn't just a concept. I just simply have given up on the likelihood that I'm going to find a girlfriend ever.